Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. On a recent program, we talked about the cosmic microwave background radiation of the universe. And in preparing for that show, I spoke to an independent Hollywood filmmaker who's put together a film called The Principal, due out in 2014. And in our conversations, we then met in person. He told me about a paper published in a journal in Russia, a science journal on geology. And it was titled Towards a Refoundation of Historical Geology by a G. Bektu. Now, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but we would say here in America, we'd say Guy Berthault. And Guy Bektu is graduated from the French Polytech School. Let me share with you from this paper. And by the way, if you noticed recently, the Fox News Channel, they had to apologize on the air because they were taken in by a false report on the internet. In fact, there's a recent paper published in a science journal where they created a fake paper and they submitted it to about 200 journals. And many of the journals published this totally intentionally fake paper. So we check. I contacted in Russia, the Volga Federal University. Actually, it's the Kazan Federal University. They're the ones that publish this peer-reviewed journal called GeoResources, just to confirm that this was published. And sure enough, of course, it was. And so it's about a refoundation of historical geology. And it begins, the abstract says that the author's experiments on stratification, imagine sedimentary strata and continents around the world, have revealed the mechanical nature of lamination, that is, of those layers, and the role of turbulent flow as an agent of stratification. Now, that caught our attention because we discuss these kinds of things on Real Science Radio on Fridays for many years here in Denver on this 50,000-watt station we're on, KLTT. And he writes that they put in question the interpretation of Nicholas Stenin, the father of modern geology, that superposed strata, that is strata layers on top of one another, were former successive sedimentary layers. That is, they were laid down over a long sequence of time, one layer, then years or thousands of years later, another layer, and so on. His experiments show that relative chronology should not be referred to as a stage, but as a sequence. This really got our attention. So for 10 years, Dr. Bektu has supported a team of Russian sedimentologists led by an Alexander Lalomov to determine the time of sedimentation of sequences of different regions of Russia. And in his paper, he says, the reason I'm doing this work is because he started studying geological history, and the founder was Nicholas Stenin. Now, here we say a Nicholas Steno, right? We talk about Steno, but the guy was born Niels Stenson. So in Europe, here in this paper, he's referred to as Nicholas Stenin, who interpreted the superposition of strata, that is one layer of strata on top of another, as a succession of layers. But no one has witnessed the stratification of rocks, writes this author. So it was possible that this interpretation may not be true. And boy, that's thinking like a scientist, right? I like that. So he describes an experiment. And in fact, the paper goes on. It's so interesting. And to help us talk through this, due to the language barrier, I was not able to interview Guy, but we reached a research assistant of his in Spain, Ian Wilders. Ian, welcome to Real Science Radio.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Well, Ian, your own background is quite impressive, but thank you for being a spokesperson for Guy. Can you pronounce his name for us?
Yes, I've been working with Guy Berthaud for many years now on all his research on sedimentology. Because as you said very correctly, Guy is a real scientist. That means he wondered why Stenon, or Steno, as you say, had put that hypothesis saying, yes, strata are just one over the other. He had never done any experiments. He had never seen strata being formed. He just postulated it.
And that,
and from then on, yeah, it just became something normal and has come down to our age as something which was quite unchallenged. And that's why he said, well, wait a minute, let's try. And he actually started with some very simple experimentations where he took some sandstone of Fontainebleau, which is in France. He crushed it.
Well, the sandstone, Ian, the sandstone that he took was already laminated, right? It looked like it was in layers.
Absolutely. It looked like in layers. So he thought, well, how did those layers come? I mean, was it a little layer after a little layer?
Right.
Or was there something else? So he just crushed it.
Yeah.
And he afterwards just let it fall through water, and very naturally, actually, the rock reformed itself in strata, in little layers, in laminated.
So that this wasn't done over a period of hours or days or weeks. He just dropped the crushed sand in water in a test tube, and he saw the instantaneous lamination reconstitute itself in the way these grains were deposited. And so that's pretty neat, and he describes that in this paper. By the way, this paper was published in 2012 in GeoResources, and he says the explanation is that the sand is a sorted powder, and the mechanics, it depends on the solids and liquids that are being deposited, and they deposit according to their density. Ian, back in the 1990s, I spent a few years at a library in Indiana, the Notre Dame University Library, and I did my research and writing there for a while. And in front of the main entrance of the library, there's a reflecting pool. And especially in the fall, a lot of leaves would blow into the pond there. And I noticed that just with the slight disturbance of the water by the breeze, that they would sort themselves in the most uncanny ways, where all the large leaves would be together and all the broken half leaves and all the little bits and all the small twigs and the large twigs. It's as though somebody spent years sorting all this stuff and it just happened by itself. And so I noticed that, and that's what I thought of at this point when I realized that Guy just took the mind of a scientist and said, well, let me try this.
Yes, I think it's a good example you're giving there. Because what makes the sorting is, at least on a smaller scale to start with, and then Guy went further, that the idea is to say it's not time which is the agent in some strange way. It is really the mechanics and the current. Mm-hmm. And the current is something which we'll see in Guy's work later, is actually fundamental to explain how strata are formed. Because strata can't be formed. In fact, the sediments can't be brought in if there's no current.
If there's no current. So we need a deposition model that has water that's able to carry those sediments that are being deposited. As this paper, and if it's okay with you, we're speaking with Ian Wilders, who is a research assistant of Guy Berthaud. If it's okay, Ian, I'd like to continue our way through this paper because it's so well done. And so the next step was that this simple experiment, as you've described it, was presented to the president of the French Society of Geology, and he thought it was significant.
Absolutely, and it was even published.
It was published at the Academy of Sciences in 1986, and then it was followed by another paper in 1988, a report on the stratified deposits of the Bijou Creek flood. Could you tell us about that?
Yes, in fact, there were two papers which were published on those initial experiments, and I'd say taking into account the mechanical properties of sediments and current to explain how strata were being built. What happened later is that he was quite intrigued by the Bijou Creek floods, which happened. There was flash floods, and where you could actually see strata being deposited, or let's say big piles of sediments, which were deposited and which were actually stratified.
Now,
he said, well,
Ian,
this is also very interesting.
Ian, here in Colorado, we have had just a month ago these terrible floods in Boulder, Colorado, north of Denver for the most part. And some people lost their lives. I'm in my mid-50s. I have traveled around, interested in science for years, and I've gone to places where there were floods and other catastrophic events like Mount St. Helens, where Mount St. Helens erupted and there was a lot of water and turbulent flows involved with Mount St. Helens, and hundreds of strata laid down, sometimes in hours or in a few days, where if you take a photograph and you show it to a mainstream geologist, they would say, well, those strata took millions of years to form. And we say, well, actually, they formed within 24 hours in this particular case.
Absolutely. And that's why Guy is insisting here on the fact of the Bijou Creek, which is just one amongst many. But that led him, in fact, to say, well, let's go further than this simple experiment, mm-hmm. and let's do a full-scale experiment with the measured current, with sediments which would be brought at a measured rate, etc. I mean, I'd say a real scientific experiment to see what are the criteria which influence the stratification.
Mm.
So, and that's why he actually went to Colorado, to the Colorado State University, and with Professor Pierre Julien, who's a professor of hydraulics, he's published and he's very well known there,
mm-hmm.
he actually did these experiments. And there's actually some video, and you can see the footage on Guy's site, which is sedimentology.fr, but it's all in English, so it should be accessible.
Okay, sedimentology.
Actually, you could see the stratification, and the stratification was subject to the speed of the flow, the sediments, the size of the sediments, and all those mechanical factors, and nothing was due to time. All happened in the time of the experiment.
Now, the professor of geology, of hydrology, who now runs the hydraulics lab up north at Fort Collins at CSU, now it's Chris Thornton. And back in August, I contacted him for a tour of his lab because I wanted to be prepared for our interview, Ian. And he's been traveling around the world, very likable fellow. We're supposed to do that tour now coming up because he'll be getting back to his lab. But this is a serious lab. I've looked at video of the lab. It is 20,000 square foot lab. The sediment flume is 200 feet long and it has a discharge. Like how much water can it send down the flume of 100 cubic feet of water per second? So this is obviously somebody come halfway around the world to work at this lab. This is a serious lab. You guys came to the right place.
Yes, and it actually gave us some very interesting results because that led to further publication. And actually, it opened, the thought process of sediments are being really built by the current. And actually, you can look at it the other way around. When you see deposited sediment, you can actually tell what type of current there was, where it was coming from, how strong it was, how far it was coming from. There's all these different criteria that you can tell from looking at the strata.
Mm. The video that you're referencing, some years ago, I saw a video from a hydraulic lab, a sediment flume, and it was the most astounding video I had ever seen in geology, and I've been looking for it ever since, and I think you just told me where to find it. And what I saw was this rapid flow and these layers of strata, which were so finely sorted, were forming simultaneously so that in the direction of the flow, I saw a number of different layers forming at the same time at the turbulent leading edge of the flow.
Exactly.
Do you think that video that I saw came from Guy?
Most probably it did. And you can see some extracts from it on his site, sedimentology.fr. And you've also got all his publications on the question of sedimentology.
Right there. So since you mentioned that, I've gone online and sedimentology.fr. And so one of the videos is playing for me now as we speak. So in his paper, he says these sand particles in this flume experiment, so this was a lot bigger than his original experiment in a test tube. He said they were deposited according to the velocity of the flow, the turbulent flow, and in a prograde way in the direction of the flow. So that's what we're discussing, right? So this is an amazing scientific discovery that seems to upset some of the fundamental principles of geology. So where do we go as we continue this topic?
Well, where we go, what's interesting, as you stated at the beginning, Guiberteau, after those experiments, has been working with a team of Russian geologists, with Alexander Lalamov. And Alexander Lalamov has done some very interesting publications of his own, saying, as Guiberteau has shown, that by looking at the rocks, you can tell what the current was like, what the conditions were like, then I'm going to study, said Alexander Lalamov, I'm going to study an area in Russia, the Crimean Peninsula, and I'm going to try to see what those conditions were. And as he actually found some boulders of nearly 2 yards across, he said, well, the minimum flow was, well, so it was about 10 meters per second. Mm. And they were most probably coming from 400 kilometers away by the types of rocks which had been transported. And so by having that information, actually, Lalamov said, well, there must have been a sort of huge flash flood, and it most probably took just a few weeks to be over. Mm. And the time which had been planned, I'd say the traditional time given by traditional geologists,
right,
was, well, in the millions of years, so Lalamov calculated it was 0.05% of the time which had been postulated.
We are finding, as we've been doing a radio show 5 days a week for 22 years here in Colorado, and we have been looking at these issues like this, and it seems to be a pattern even among those geologists who will not agree with Guy or with you, Ian Wilders, the mainstream geologists who are still totally committed to Steno, little by little, they are redating the amount of time it took. For example, here in America, in the Northwest, we have something called the Scablands, which cover thousands of square miles of eastern Washington. And they were believed to have formed over, you know, thousands or millions of years. Now they're saying primarily it was the Lake Missoula flood and a natural dam breached, and it happened rapidly. Let me give you just a couple other examples. We have in Wyoming, the Heart Mountain Detachment. We have this 62 square miles of mountain that broke apart into 400 square miles in, they say now, 30 minutes, the whole mountain broke apart. Increasingly, there are these examples of strata and incredible geologic tectonic activity that happened, we're finding out, in minutes, hours, days, weeks, and months. Repeatedly, we're being told, well, it wasn't a million years like we had thought.
I think that what Guiberteau's work has really underlined, it's that because of Steno's first postulate, we thought we actually had a clock. Mm. By looking at the strata, we said, okay, we've got a clock. And the experimental data has totally invalidated that idea that we've got a clock. Mm. We can't tell when it happened. We can just say what happened. So what we've actually got, we haven't got a clock, we've got a camera, where we take a photo of what the conditions were when the rocks were being built.
Mm-hmm.
But the implications, in fact, are also very interesting because the rocks have been at the basis of a lot of other science.
Right.
For example, I was talking just this week to a doctor in biology who had just finished her research on the evolution of the shrimp. And she said, yes, we use the molecular clock, which gives us two mutations every million years. And I said, yes, but how was that clock calibrated?
Right, sure.
She said, well, it's calibrated on fossils. And how were the fossils calibrated? On the rocks.
On the rocks. And how are the rocks calibrated?
Now the rocks
on the fossils
don't give us any calibration. So everything that comes from it actually can't be used. So paleontology, even biology, which have used the rocks, have lost their foundation.
Have you looked at the nautiloid fossils in the Grand Canyon? There's a limestone layer in the Grand Canyon here in the U.S., in Arizona, called the Red Wall Limestone. It's about 500 feet thick. And the bottom 7 feet of that is very persistent. Through the whole 277 miles of the canyon, there is that bottom 7 foot layer. And these nautiloid fossils, they look like ice cream cones with a squid on the top of them. And there's about one nautiloid fossil. They're about the size of your arm, at least the larger ones, every square meter. And if that's consistent through the breadth and the width of this limestone layer, we're talking about millions of nautiloid fossils, and about 12% of them are standing vertically on their point. So, Ian, we're told that this limestone formed at the bottom of a placid, shallow sea, you know, one grain at a time, but you can't get millions of nautiloid fossils being buried in that mechanism. I think that those nautiloid fossils falsifies the account of the limestone deposition.
Absolutely. And anyway, you don't get limestone which falls for millions of years. It just doesn't exist. Sediments come always mixed.
And
so when you see that type of fossils and that thickness of layer, that gives the information of the strength of the current which was there at that time. And so the thicker it is, I'd say the stronger the current was. It doesn't say anything else. It doesn't say it's anything old or new.
Right.
Of course, if you see thousands of fossils which are blocked in there, just imagine if you were living at that time and there was that type of current, everything gets washed together.
Right.
So what the fossils give us as information, it's the ecosystem which has been washed along with the current. You must never forget the current, and that's what has been often forgotten.
And sometimes the purity of these, well, speaking of limestone layers, sometimes the purity is extraordinary. And to think that for millions of years in this one massive deposition that there would be no twigs, and no, it stretches the credulity to the breaking point. And when you keep talking about current, the faster the current gets, the greater its carrying capacity, so that it could carry with it tremendous quantities of sediments if it's moving fast enough.
And actually, there are some equations which exist, Einstein's equation, or not the Einstein, the geologist, which actually can predict the speed and size and the carrying capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all this is, I'd say, basic fluid mechanics.
Yeah, that's right. We have a dear friend of this program, Dr. Walt Brown, who he got his PhD in mechanical engineering from MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and has done a tremendous amount of work with fluid mechanics. And he would agree strongly with what you guys are finding out, that these layers of sedimentation have really nothing to do with long periods of time, but it has to do with the speed of the flow and the erosional material that's available to be carried. So we're about out of time. We're speaking with Ian Wilders, a research assistant for Guy Bechtou. Ian, could you give us an idea of what is the current state of this research?
Well, this research is still, actually, the foundations of this research, I'd say, have been done, have been finished. Now it's being picked up by other scientists like Alexander Lalamov. But this year I had the privilege of going with Guy and Alexander Lalamov to China where in Beijing we presented the latest publication of Guy that you'll also find on his website about the implications of this new way of seeing sedimentology. And once we've gotten rid of the idea of time, we can really look at mechanics, then we can ask other questions saying, where did these currents come from? And his latest work is on orogenesis, where it would be the formation of mountains, which would actually cause a change in the axis of the Earth, which could explain the major transgressions and regressions, and which would explain most of the sediments.
Well, you're talking about extraordinary causes. Some kind of extraordinary events must have come into play that have no parallel in what we see today. Simply the lava flows that make Mount St. Helens look like it was a tiny little eruption as compared to what's happened in the past. Well, we will continue to follow your work, Ian, and Guy Bechtu's work. Could I give you an idea? At our website, realscienceradio.com, we have what we call our list of not-so-old things. It's sort of a silly title, but, you know, we're a radio show. We're not publishing scientists here. But our list of not-so-old things, we have about 25 examples of things that, you know, mainstream geologists and other scientists said would take millions of years to form. And now they said, oops, we were wrong. This could form rapidly, sometimes in decades, sometimes even in hours or months. It's been an honor to talk with you, Ian. Very interesting work you guys are doing.
And congratulations for your show. And it's been very nice talking to you on behalf of Guy Bechtu.
Well, thank you very much. And we'll follow that work. We appreciate Ian Wilders and his time. And that website again, sedimentology.fr. Of course, FR for France. And so sedimentology.fr. I've just watched one of the videos as we were talking. I'm so very excited to have found these videos again. So we'll see if we can include those in our show summary right here at realscienceradio.com. This is Bob Enyart. If you'd like to help support us and keep us on the air, just go to realscienceradio.com, click on the store, and you could purchase some of our science materials, debates, videos, books, and you could even make a donation, a one-time or monthly, to help Real Science Radio stay on the air. May God bless you.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris, and Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.